The economic choices underlying those protests in Ukraine that all are all over the news this morning.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. As we've been hearing, thousands of protesters in the capital of Ukraine, Kiev, have blocked government buildings today in the largest political crisis in that country in nearly a decade. Demonstrators are calling for a change of government after the country's president abruptly ditched a deal for closer ties with the European Union. The president said the EU deal would hurt ties with Russia. The BBC's Andrew Walker joins us for more on the commercial flows that are such a key part of this political story. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
Let's look at the economics and trade ties underneath this story a bit. If Ukraine were closer to the Eurozone, what are the potential benefits?
Easier access to this very lucrative market. Actually, it has to be said, Ukraine is already exporting quite a lot to the European Union. And of course, there's money to be had from it if Ukraine could boost its exports to what is a much richer part of the world than its neighbours on the other side, on the east, Russia and so forth.
All right. What might closer ties with Moscow mean for Ukraine? They certainly have a history in this area.
Yes, and they do also have very extensive trade ties with Russia, not quite the same order of magnitude as with the European Union, but not very far behind. I think one of the other things at the back of the Ukrainian government's minds is the thought that by being close to Russia, they've got more a chance of avoiding some of the problems they've had in the past where Russia has turned off the gas taps. There was a period when it was almost part of the annual routine of having a row about gas prices, gas payments between Russia and Ukraine, sometimes leading to supplies being interrupted. So close relations with Russia would reduce the risk of that kind of thing happening in the future.
The BBC's Andrew Walker, thank you very much.
My pleasure, David.
Now let's do some numbers. The FT100 in London is down 0.7% right now. Stock index futures in the U.S. are floating around the unchanged mark at the moment. The yen is down to 102.8 to the dollar. And more people shopped in real stores and online in the four big holiday shopping days, but sales were down 2.7% in the U.S. The average shopping bill, $407, down 4% from last year, according to the National Retail Federation. And there's a new smartphone using the Android system that's hitting the market this week with two screens, one front, one back. It's from Yota Phone of Russia, $600. Marketplace's Dan Weissman went looking for distinctions between innovation and gimmickry.
Sarah Kessler writes about technology for Fast Company magazine.
I guess I'm cautious to say this is ridiculous.
After all, lots of people said the iPad was a dumb idea with a silly name.
But I guess when I first looked at it, I did not really see why I would need one, no.
Alexis Madrigal covers tech for The Atlantic.
It strikes me as kind of middling, but you never know.
Bay Area designer Chris Nussel is the author of Make It So, Interaction Design Lessons from Science Fiction. He agrees the Yota Phone is no lightsaber.
This is a band-aid of an innovation.
But just the other day, he had a problem the Yota Phone might have addressed. Getting off the BART train, he ran out of battery. The Yota Phone's second screen uses e-ink, like a Kindle. It uses hardly any juice. Maybe a Yota Phone wouldn't have bricked itself. He could have texted the colleague picking him up. So, would he consider buying one?
Because I had that experience on BART, hell yes I would.
There's one potential customer. In Chicago, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
It's not often the U.S. Treasury shakes things up. Consider its bonds. You buy them, you get them back with interest. There's no app. It's old school and to the point. But next year, the Treasury is going to make a change by issuing what is called a floating rate note. Investors appear to be keen on the idea of a government floater. I'm not ashamed to admit I have no idea what one is. Marketplace's explainer of arcane financial terminology is Patty Hirsch, and he's here to help. Welcome, Patty.
Good morning, David.
A floating rate note is like a?
Well, it's a bit like you on your boat, David.
It sort of rhymes, float and boat, but I don't own a boat.
Well, okay, so let's imagine that you did. When you're sitting on the deck of your boat, sipping martinis or whatever it is you do up there, you're always a certain distance from the surface of the water, right? Let's say 5 feet. But how far are you from the sea bottom?
I suppose it depends on the tide.
Right. So the distance of the surface of the water to the sea bottom varies. 1 minute it might be like 1.5 feet. Another minute it might be 3 feet. But you're always 5 feet on top of that, right, floating on the water.
I think I'm sinking under this metaphor,
oh,
Barry.
Right, okay, be very with me. But the same goes for this new type of government debt. Instead of being fixed at, say, 7%, these notes are going to come with an interest rate of, say, 5% that floats above a variable base rate. So your total interest payment will move up and down as that base rate moves. So 5% plus whatever the baseline happens to be.
So this is not unlike some consumer loans. You go online and look up the base interest rate and you add the spread and you know what you're supposed to pay.
Right. And when it comes to floating bonds, corporations use these kinds of bonds all the time, right? They usually use LIBOR. But in this case, the government will use the yield on the 13-week Treasury bill. So if that rate goes up, then the interest rate on the floating rate rises too. And if it goes down, then the rate falls.
I see. So this is so people can buy government debt that will pay more as interest rates and possibly inflation goes up. They'll have a cushion, so they're not locked in.
Right. So the holders of these notes are going to get paid more as interest rates rise. And because base rates are pretty much at zero now, that is going to happen eventually. But of course, these bonds are going to come with a standard warning. Down the line, if rates fall, you could lose money. And remember, these notes will adjust constantly, just like you on your boat.
I rent kayaks. I don't have a boat.
Yeah. So you keep saying.
Fatty Hirsch, senior editor at Marketplace and our explainer-in-chief. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
More of our public media kind of business and economics reporting is at marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.